Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janabal Laba Girir Bardhari Gopi Janabal Laba Girir Bardhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Gopi Jana Ballabha Girir Bardhari Jai Gopi Jana Ballabha Girir Bardhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Janaranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jai Mishabam Zabadaraj Gajaya Stote Satasi Simad Esi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Om Vishnu Padam Sampradaraj Gachaya Stote Satasi Simad Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasi Thakur Prabhupada Ki Go Premanandi Krishna, Krishna, Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 14, Pregnancy of Diti in the Evening, text 44, 45, and I believe we'll do 46. Kashyapo Vacha, Kritasho Kanutapena, Sadya Pratyavamarshanat, Bhagavat Yuru Manachcha, Bhave Mai Apicharat, Kritashokanutapena, Sadya Pratya Vamarshanat, Bhagavat Yuru Manachcha, Bhave Mai Apicharat, Kritashokanutapena, Sadya Pratyavamarshanat, Bhagavat Yuru Manachcha, Bhave Mai Apicharat. Vaishnavis. Kashyapa Uvacha, the learned Kashyapa said, Kritashoka, having lamented Anutapena by penitence, Sadya, immediately, Pratyamarshana, by proper deliberation, Bhagavati, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Uru, great. Manat, adoration. Cha, and. Bhave, unto Lord Shiva. Mai api, unto me also. Cha, and. Adarat, by respect. Putrasya, of the sun. Eva, certainly, cha, and putranam, of the sons, bhavita, shall be born. Eka, one. Satam, of the devotees. Mata, approved. Gasyanti, will broadcast. Yat, of whom. Yasa, recognition. Chudam, transcendental. Bhagavat, of the personality of Godhead. Yashasa, with recognition. Samam, equally. Translation. The learned Kashyapa said, because of your lamentation, penitence, and proper deliberation, and also because of your unflinching faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and your adoration for Lord Shiva and me, one of the sons, Prahlada, of your son, Hiranyakashipu, will be an approved devotee of the Lord, and his fame will be broadcast equally with that of the personality of Godhead. Text 46. In order to follow in his footsteps, saintly persons will try to emulate his character by practicing freedom from animosity, just as the purifying processes rectify gold of inferior quality. Purport. Yoga practice, the process of purifying one's existential identity, is based mainly on self-control. Without self-control, one cannot practice freedom from animosity. In the conditioned state, every living being is envious of another living being. But in the liberated state, there is an absence of animosity. Prahlada Maharaja was tortured by his father in so many ways. Yet after the death of his father, he prayed for his father's liberation by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He did not ask any benediction that he might have asked, but he prayed that his atheistic father might be liberated. He never cursed any of the persons who engaged in torturing him at the instigation of his father. Om Ganachimadandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militang Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So Kashyapa Muni is listing the good things that DT has done after the debacle. And we've already discussed how what this chapter is about may seem to be not so significant. The affairs governing conception and the interaction between Kashyapa and Diti. But you'll see that the fate of the world is hanging in the balance. And how does that relate to our contemporary scene today? As we spoke a few days ago, the problems of the world are not due to the quantity of the population, but the quality of the population. And the quality of the population is determined by the consciousness of the parents at the time of conception. One of the grandsons of DT, Prahlad, will be equally as famous as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in today's verse and purport, we find out that freedom from animosity is a major quality, especially since in the conditioned state, as we read here, every living being is envious of another living being. But in the liberated state, there is an absence of animosity. So sometimes situations arise in a devotee's life in which it seems animosity is a justified outcome. And so the devotee has to practice self-control, especially because you don't want any lumps in the heart forming which will increase your insensitivity in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. an aspiring devotee, a sadhaka, is very careful about the stones in the heart. We don't want to be hard-hearted. Therefore, we fear situations in which we would have a response of animosity towards someone. And it takes self-control. As we hear in the purport, also, yoga practice, the process of purifying one's existential identity, is based mainly on self-control. No one likes to feel wronged. No one likes to feel ill-treated. And the natural response is animosity. You don't like the person who did that to you, and you have negative feelings swelling up in your heart. But then you think, I need to chant Hare Krishna. And how can I continuously chant Hare Krishna if I've got lumps of stone in my heart? So that is a major reason why Krishna Bhaktas clamp down on any potential feelings of animosity. They try to understand how, as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said, the reason why I can see faults in others is because I have the fault a millionfold in me. Therefore, I'm the world's expert in the fault. That's why I can see it a bit in you. We're not through with DT yet. Everything seems to be on a happy ending now. After all, Prahlad Maharaj will be born as her grandson, and she seems to be, actually, the Shastra says she's joyful hearing that her two sons, although so terrible, will be killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How long does that attitude last? When you get to the sixth canto, you find Diti's got a problem again. She's going to be angry and full of lamentation about the death of her two sons, but she's not directly going to blame the Supreme Personality of Godhead who killed them. She's going to blame Indra, her nephew, the son of her sister, Aditi. She's going to go on a tirade about Indra. How can he arrange for the Supreme Personality of Godhead acting as his instrument? She's not blaming the Lord directly, but she's blaming Indra. He manipulated the whole situation, and the result was my two sons were killed. How can Indra do this just to preserve his position? Oh, just see how horrible those in positions of power are. Even though their body is destined to be eaten by worms or burnt into ashes or gobbled up by wild creatures and passed out as stool, still they engage in these murderous activities just to preserve their regime. This is all on Indra and his sense gratification. He, just to preserve his power, he's done these atrocities against my boys. She really gets into it. She speaks about the temporariness of material achievement and why should you commit such horrible activities just to preserve your impermanent body and your impermanent high post. So she goes on and on for a few verses in the sixth canto. And what she's saying has truth to it, of course. The body is temporary. One's position in the material world is temporary. And then she comes to the conclusion. Womb warfare. I'm going to have a son who can kill Indra. She's fighting back according to the weapons she has at hand. So, what does she do? She begins to butter up Kashyapa Muni. They're not through yet. She serves him so sweetly. She says so many nice words. She does everything in her power to make Kashyapa Muni's mind spin and come under her control. she's acting as the epitome of gentleness, submissiveness, sweetness, all for a particular purpose. Therefore, the Bhagavatam calls this artificial behavior. So, of course, every husband would like to be treated sweetly and nicely and gently and submissively. No doubt about that. But Diti had an ulterior motivation. She wanted to get control of his mind so he would help fulfill her plan to have a son that could kill her nephew Indra. And the plan worked. And again, I guess you can't blame Kashyapa so much for having a wife who treats him super sweetly. But he's going to lament. She treats him so sweetly, so nicely that, what do you expect? Kashyapa says to her, whatever you want, just ask for it. I'll give you whatever you want. Aha, he's caught. And he's shocked at what he hears when he gives her the permission. You can ask whatever you want, I'll grant it. She says, give me a son who can kill Indra. Oh, Kashyapa says, oh my God, I've blown it again. Oh no, I've already given her my word that I'll do whatever she says, and now she's asking me to help her engage in such an impious act of killing Indra, the king of heaven, and her own nephew, the son of her sister. Oh, how bad does this get? So Kashyapa starts doing some quick thinking. How to get out of this situation. So he presents to his wife a year-long process of rituals and purification that she can do in order to achieve her objective. And he warns her, a slight slip-up in this year-long process and you could have a son who's the friend of Indra instead of the enemy of Indra. But Diti pays no attention to that. Let's go, full steam ahead. So Kashyapa was very clever. He gave her a year-long process of austerities, rituals, and she thought, this is great. This will help me to achieve my outcome. Indra got word of what she was doing. And just like she was deceitful and with an ulterior motive in terms of her sweetness to her husband, Indra put on his own deceitfulness. He came while his aunt was pregnant. He came and acted so nicely and gently and respectful to his aunt, even though he knew, I've got to kill that child in the womb. So you have two persons with ulterior motivations. The outcome, of course, was that Diti did a minor slip-up in the year-long rituals, as Kashyapa expected. It was a very elaborate system of rituals, austerities. She slipped up a bit. She was very exhausted from her austerities one day, and she went to sleep without washing her hands and feet after eating. And so Indra was there, watching and waiting. And he entered her womb with his mystic power of becoming anima, smaller than the smallest. And he cut the embryo. The embryo then became 7. And he cut those 7. They became 49. And then you had the Maruts, who cried out, all 49 of them cried out to Indra, we're your brothers. Because in Vedic system of family life, cousins are also considered brothers. You know that expression, cousin brothers, like the Pandavas had their cousin brothers. So They pleaded to Indra for his mercy. And Indra realized they didn't die. I tried to kill one the embryo. It multiplied. No one died. I think this is because of the overall Vaishnav potency of my aunt's year-long austerities. Kashyapa didn't simply give her material austerities and rituals to do. There was an overriding element of bhakti. So Indra concluded, that's why I couldn't kill the children in the womb, because of Diti's bhakti amidst all the rituals and austerities that she performed. So here you see Diti couldn't get over, although she says in this chapter, in this canto, third canto, I'm happy that my sons will be killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When it actually happened, she was angry, full of lamentation, and wanted revenge, but she didn't blame the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She said, it's all on Indra. He's the one who's ordered this killing of my children. So then we get to the seventh canto, and Pritchett Maharaj has some burning questions. He asks Shukadeva Goswami that Samapriya Sahit Brahman Bhutanam Bhagavan Swayam. We know that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Sama, equal to everyone. We know Priya, he's dear to everyone. Suhit, he's everyone's friend. We know this, O Brahmana Shukadeva Goswami. Yet we see that he seems to be acting on behalf of Indra. He's taken sides with Indra against the demons. The whole sixth canto is full of rivalry and battles between the devatas and the demons. And so Pritchett Maharaj, having also heard about Diti, is wondering. Not that he has any doubts, but he's wondering how people will perceive this. Is the Supreme Personality of Godhead partial? That can't be so. But it seems that he's showing favor to the demigods and hostility toward the demons. But he's supposed to be the friend of everyone. If he's affectionate to the devatas, why can't he also show affection for the demons? If the demigods are dear to him, why can't the demons also be dear to him? Otherwise, where's the impartiality? So Shukadeva Goswami hears this question. Pritchett Maharaj presents it in two or three verses. He says, oh, Brahmana, I've got doubts. Now this is Pritchett Maharaj taking on the doubts of us. And perhaps we've never thought about it. Perhaps we just accept it subconsciously in our mind as we read about these incidents. Well, yeah, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is siding up with the demigods. That's the way it should be. He's favoring the demigods. Yes, down with those demons. But we don't think about the deeper implications. Are we assuming that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is partial? This is why Pritchett Maharaj wants to get to the bottom of this. And so he presents it all to Shukadeva Goswami. And what is Shukadeva Goswami's response? I know some of these verses because ever since here in New Dwarka in 1976, working on these books, I read this chapter over and over again, the beginning verses about partiality, impartiality, because I realized ingrained in me was an assumption that, yeah, the Supreme Personality of Godhead should favor the devatas. He should be partial in that way, even though he says in Bhagavad Gita, Samaham Sarvabhuteshu, I'm equal to everyone, and Suridam Sarvabhutanam, I'm everyone's friend. But it's just, that's just the way it is. So I've studied these few verses again and again, trying to get to the bottom of my assumptions. And indeed, Prichard Maharaj, in presenting to Shukadeva Goswami, points out what the assumption is, the unconscious assumption we have that we don't realize we're making. We're imposing our material vision on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that means we're assuming that Krishna has a material body. Because only by your having a material body can you have friends and enemies. Enmity and friendship is a characteristic of the material body. So Shukadeva Goswami is going to respond. Sadhu Krishna Maharaja. Maharaja, you have asked an essential question, an excellent question. Haresh Charitam Adbhutam. Your question is going to lead to me reciting the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his glorious activities. So Shukadeva Goswami is going to explain that there's no way that Krishna can be partial. There's no way that he can be unjust, because those qualities are of a material body, and Krishna has no material body. He has no need for friends. In the material sense, we're not talking about Sakyaras and Vaikuntha. We're talking about the material conception of friendship, which means I need help from you. I need support from you. You're my friend. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has no needs like that. And he has no fear. Enemies are persons who are obstructing what you want to do. Or they're harassing you. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead has no fear. So how then, Shukadeva Goswami explains, how can the Supreme Personality of Godhead be caught up in enmity and friendship, friends and enemies, partiality? He's acting in his absolute way, and that absolute way benefits everyone. And this is why Diti was happy at first when she heard her sons are going to be killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She knew that any way you come in contact personally with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you benefit, even if he kills you. So this is a very deep subject matter that gets to the point of Avajanati Mamhudha, when Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, fools think I have an ordinary body and I'm an ordinary person, even though I can seem to act as a human being in my Naralila, my human-like pastimes, but fools think my body is material. Thinking that the Lord is partial means thinking that he has a material body, because material partiality is all part of having, it's the expression of having a material body. Now, you say, well, doesn't Krishna say that if someone is dear to him, that's a special category? But that's a spiritual dispensation. It's not the outcome of having a material body. It's not due to impartiality or partiality in the material sense. Krishna's just saying, I'm equal to everyone, but if you're going to treat me with affection, I'll respond with affection. But everyone has the opportunity to treat the Lord with affection. That's why he makes his offer, his blanket offer, so apparent in Bhagavad Gita. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhaktya priyashtati. You can offer me a leaf, a fruit, flower, or water. If it's with bhakti, I'll accept it. In other words, Krishna is saying, I like to come under the control of my devotee's love. In that way, I'm partial to the devotees because of their love. That's all part of being a person. And this subject matter of dealing with the devotees, dealing with the non-devotees, makes even Lord Brahma wonder. What to speak of Prichard Maharaj. in Brahma's prayers after the Brahma Vimohana Leela in the 10th canto, the bewilderment of Lord Brahma, he says, what are you going to do, Krishna? You've given yourself to Putana, who approached you with a poison-smeared breast to kill you. You gave her the position of a nurse in the spiritual world. How are you going to reward your dedicated Brajabasis? My mind is boggled by this. What else do you have in store? If you can give Putana and her family, Bakasura, etc., you can give them positions in the spiritual world, and they wanted to kill you. What do you got up your sleeve? What do you got to give to devotees who have dedicated their whole life for your pleasure? The secret is that Krishna comes under the control of their love. He wants to do that. That's the special product that Krishna reserves for his bhaktas. I want to come under the control of their love. So in all these dealings, you see Krishna is expert at reciprocation. And that expertise at reciprocation doesn't come from material body. Material body, by definition, means enmity, friendship, fears, partiality, needing support, needing to take shelter outside of yourself. But Krishna is Atmarama. He's self-sufficient. So this is how Prichit Maharaj and Shukadeva Goswami dispose of this issue. The very issue that Diti is raising indirectly in a respectful way. Now, I'm not blaming the Supreme Lord for killing my sons. He was just an instrument. But that Indra, I want a son who can kill him. So in this way, the Bhagavatam just gets deeper and deeper and deeper. And therefore, whenever we have an opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam, we should seize it. What's a good example of your seizing? I remember back in the 60s, revolutionary groups in the USA had the motto, seize the time! Well, you can see that in devotees when they hear a word of a pizza party. they seize the time. We seize the time for an opportunity to hear about Krishna's glories. And that's what Prichit Maharaj is doing, and therefore Shukadeva Goswami is reciprocating. Sadhu Prishta Maharaja. Maharaj, you're spot on. Haresh Charitam Adbhutam. We're going to talk about the glorious activities of the Supreme Personality Godhead and clear up this whole cloud that conditioned souls impose on the Lord, this cloud of material partiality. We're going to clear that up and establish that the Supreme Personality Godhead has no material body, therefore he cannot have material friends and enemies, material partiality. Hare Krishna. Any questions? We have to go to Bhrigupati first.
Thank you, Maharaj. I really appreciate your class, and I really appreciate how you deeply meditate on the Bhagavatam. And I never made that connection before between, you know, Diti's behavior at this point, when she's happy that her sons are going to be killed by the Supreme Lord, and then later on she flip-flops and she's kind of going after Indra. So here's my question. Here in the United States, we have, like, there's laws, and people who follow the laws, they're favored by the government. People who don't follow by the laws, they're punished by the government. Does that apply to the demigods and the demons? In other words, is that a principle that's involved in why the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears to be favorable to the demigods, because they're like law-abiding citizens, whereas the Asuras, they're not.
The Bhagavatam makes the point that it's all the modes of material nature. It's not Krishna directly. The demigods act in Sattvaguna, and therefore when Sattvaguna is predominant, the demigods are victorious, and when Rajaguna and Tamaguna are predominant, the demons become victorious. And sometimes Krishna personally lets that happen because he wants to diminish the Devata's pride. That's Prabhupada's explanation of what's going on. The modes of nature are one. Sometimes Sattvaguna is prominent, sometimes Rajaguna is prominent. They increase or decrease, not simultaneously, the Bhagavatam says, but one at a time. And so according to how the modes are predominant, according to how one particular mode of nature is predominant, bodies composed of that mode become prominent. And so it's actually not Krishna. Now, Krishna can appear in his many incarnations and forms, but they do their own thing, irrespective of the modes of material nature. So you have to see two realities happening at once. You've got the modes of material nature, one incrementally increasing or decreasing, and then you've got Krishna, who's beyond the modes, who's got his own agenda. But he seems like he's acting in favor of the Devatas, but actually he's doing his own thing for his own purposes, which have nothing to do with the modes of material nature.
Okay. Thank you. I got that. Now, the demigods, they're called Sakama Bhaktas. Is that correct? So in those, does Krishna sometimes reciprocate with them on the basis of some type of devotional service that he's perceiving on their part?
Yes, he reciprocates with whatever bhakti they're offering, although it's often mixed. Their bhakti is mixed. These are deep subjects, good for an hour or two of discussion. So I thank you all for your kind association. Hare Krishna.